All right, so I'm going to read the next verse because they're together, and then we'll read by the word-by-word synonyms. Avapurdra vapamte asad vir vishyatma vihi vidhuta kalma shastanam virajanatmanayavahi. Tat.
That.
Dhyana. Positive meditation. Utriktaya. Being freed from. Vakya. By a devotional attitude. Vishuddha. Purified. Vishanaha. By intelligence. Pare. Unto the transcendence. Tasmin. In that. Narayana. The personality of Godhead Sri Krishna. Pare.
Unto the lotus feet.
Ekanta matayaha.
Of those who are fixed in the Supreme,
who is one,
Gatim,
destination,
Avapahu,
attained,
Duravapam,
very difficult to obtain,
Te,
by them,
Asadbihi,
by the materialists.
Vishaya-atma-bihi,
absorbed in material needs.
Viduta,
washed off.
Kalmasaha,
material contaminations.
Stanam,
abode.
Vidajena,
without material passion.
Atmana eva,
by the self same body.
He
certainly.
Certainly.
So translation. Thus by pure consciousness due to constant devotional remembrance, they attain the spiritual sky which is ruled over by the Supreme Narayana, Lord Krishna. This is attained only by those who meditate upon the one Supreme Lord without deviation. This abode of the Lord Sri Krishna, known as Goloka Vrindavan, cannot be attained by persons who are absorbed in the material conception of life. But the Pandavas, being completely washed of all material contamination, attain that abode in their very same bodies. So, purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. According to Srila Jiva Goswami, a person freed from the three modes of material qualities, namely goodness, passion, and ignorance, and situated in transcendence, can reach the highest perfection of life without change of body. Srila Sanatana Goswami, in his Hari Bhakti Vilas, says that a person, whatever he may be, can attain the perfection of a twice-born Brahmana by undergoing the spiritual disciplinary actions under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master, exactly as a chemist can turn gunmetal into gold by chemical manipulation. It is therefore the actual guidance that matters in the process of becoming a Brahman, even without change of body, or in going back to Godhead without change of body. Srila Jiva Goswami remarks that the word he used in this connection positively affirms this truth, and there is no doubt about this factual position. The Bhagavad Gita in the 14th chapter, text 26, also affirms this statement of Srila Jiva Goswami, when the Lord says that anyone who executes devotional service systematically without deviation can attain the perfection of Brahman by surpassing the contamination of the three modes of material nature, and when the Brahman perfection is still more advanced by the self-same execution of devotional service, there is no doubt at all that one can attain the supreme spiritual planet, Goloka Vrindavan, without change of body. As we have already discussed in connection with the Lord's returning to his abode without a change of body. So, Om Gadatya Vrindasya Gananjana Shalakya Chakshunin Miditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, just several things I want to clear out. When Prabhupada says, without a change of body, and Krishna says, without a change of body, there's a transformation of the body. It's not, that's really what Prabhupada is referring to. It's not, I certainly do not want to be back in the spiritual world with this body. But, you know, Krishna arranges, you know, the body, as they say, morph. Everyone's familiar with that word, morph, transformation, like that. Because basically it's understood that Krishna's energy is one. And this is very interesting. This is called Shakti Parinam, actually. It's interesting. In regard to our whole philosophy, our whole Siddhanta and Krishna consciousness. Shakti Parinam means Krishna has Shaktis. Of course, Krishna, Vishnu Shakti Para Prokta Shetrogya Kitata Para Avidya Karma Sangadya Chutir Shakti Ishate. Basically, there's three different categories of Shaktis. Vishnu Shakti Para Prokta, the spiritual energy. Shetrogya Kitata Para, that's us. We're known as Shetrogya, that means the knower of the field. Krishna is also the knower of the field. But in this particular context, we are Tatashta Shakti. Tatashta, let me describe the word Tatashta. It's very interesting. Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes Tatashta not as a specific location, like some people might describe it, but he describes it like the delineation when you're going to the ocean, between the shore and the ocean. You know, it's a line, but it's not really existing because either you're in the shore or the ocean. But it's the division between the shore and the ocean. Do you understand that? Mm-hmm. And sometimes the ocean, because of the tide, envelops or washes over more of the shore, and sometimes the ocean goes back. You know, when the tide changes. So it's like us. That sometimes we become enveloped by the material energy and sometimes we become free from the material energy through the process of bhakti, of course. So, anyway, so the tatashta shakti, so there's three shaktis, the internal potency, the tatashta shakti, which is us, and then also avidya karma sanganya, which means ignorant activity shakti. That means this material world. You got it. So, the interesting thing is that all these shaktis become transformed because Krishna, being all-powerful and also swarat, independent, has the ability to do this thing called shakti parinam. Shakti parinam means to transform shakti, which is really interesting. Just like we see, of course, that the Adi Shakti is Srimati Radharani, and Srimati Radharani expands as the gopis, the eight principal gopis, and the other gopis, you know, the shaktis, and then expands as the wives of Krishna and Dwarka, and then the Lakshmis, and then you have the further expansion of Durga within this material world, which is really interesting. I mean, just like, I mean, we were talking about this with a devotee the other day. He said it's described that Lord Brahma's creates Saraswati, yet he gets married to her. And then I said, no, that's not true. Because Lord Brahma creates, manifests one of the Saraswatis, the goddess of fortune. And that Saraswati manifests or marries Lord Vishnu, and there's another Saraswati that marries an expansion of that Saraswati and marries Lord Brahma. So there's all these like expansions of expansions of expansions of expansions. And here, we're talking about the Pandavas. They're actually expansions of devotees in Goloka Vrindavan. It's interesting. Because they're Nityasiddha devotees. So the Nityasiddha devotees in Vrindavan, they expand as the Nityaparshada devotees in Vaikuntha planets. And they expand as the demigods. This is described in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, in case you're interested. And they expand in certain incarnations that you have here in this world. I mean, for example, Garuda, the bird carrier of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is originally in Goloka Vrindavan as a coward boy, either Subala or Sudama, I forget which one right now. So you have, it's really interesting, the ontological position of all these different personalities. So here's the scribe, the Pandavas entered into Goloka Vrindavan. So generally we hear that the Pandavas, their relationship is with Krishna in Hastinapur and, Dwarka, which is in the same mood of Goloka Vrindavan. But we understand that their expansions, when the Pandavas appeared on earth, they're expansions of the original personalities in Goloka Vrindavan. And sometimes they expand and sometimes, for lack of a better word, contract. I don't know if that's a precise philosophical word, but sometimes they unexpand. Because I don't know if that's a word either. But in any way, so that's the Pandavas' ontological position. They're eternal associates of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So anyway, getting back to this this principle of Shakti Parinam, I hope I don't get too technical about this, transformation of Shakti. The impersonalists, they have this philosophy, particularly Shankaracharya's followers, of Brahman Parinam, which means Brahman gets transformed. So they say, of course, the word Brahman means the greatest, that which nothing is greater than. So Shankaracharya posits, or speculates, or it's his duty anyway, serving the Supreme Lord as an incarnation of Lord Shiva. He posits that Brahman is everything, sarvakal idam Brahma, and Brahman gets transformed into all this variety that we see here. But ultimately everything is Brahman. But the problem with that philosophy of being Brahman being transformed is that when you say Brahman is transformed, that means something else must be stronger than Brahman to have transformed Brahman. So that's the problem with Shankaracharya's philosophy. Another variety of that is that Brahman falls into illusion. That's called vivarta. That's another technical word. Brahman vivarta. That somehow or other Brahman is the greatest, but here I am, I'm Brahman, I'm God, I'm everything, whatever. And I fell into illusion. But then the same, it's a similar problem with that particular philosophy, because then something must be greater than the Brahman to put it into illusion or to transform it. You understand? This is the problem with Mayavadi philosophy. Mayavadi philosophy is different than Nirvishesha. Nirvishesha is something different. Nirvishesha means without variety. And Shunyavadi is even different than that. Shunyavadi is Buddhist philosophy. Void. Ultimately, everything is void. Anyway, not the philosophy that Lord Buddha taught, incidentally. That's a philosophy that many of his followers are teaching nowadays, have taught, and they don't follow Lord Buddha. So our philosophy is Shakti Parinam. Does everyone remember that?
Shakti
Parinam. That Krishna's Shaktis get transformed.
Parinam?
Parinam, yeah. Pari, P-A-R-I, like Parijata, N-A-M. Shakti Parinam. So, anyway, just a little background like that. So Krishna, getting back to the point, so Krishna can transform this body of flesh and blood into something that's described as Ashnaviram, that means no veins. He can transform it into something beautiful, wonderful, ecstatic. I'm waiting for it to happen. So it hasn't happened yet. this body still aches and pains. And, recently I had operations on my spiritual body. Had to go to the hospital, have a hernia operation on my spiritual transformed body. No, it's not a transformed body. However, on the other hand, even if a body is not transformed in that way, if the body is being used to serve Krishna, it may still be physical and spiritual. That's interesting, too. So there's different types of transformation. One transformation would be like just morphing this whole form into something, you know, like a cow or something in the spiritual world. Cow with glasses on it. So, and another type of transformation is just removing the coverings of the three modes of nature and transforming the object without morphing it. Does everyone understand?
Sort of like prasadam.
Yeah, like prasadam. It doesn't get small, but there's a spiritual quality. Or even this microphone, touching the microphone. Because we're using the microphone and the microphone stand in Krishna consciousness. It's not that it gets transformed into something alive that I can talk to. Hello, microphone. But it's spiritualized. Just like Prabhupada said, an iron rod being put into fire becomes like fire. In other words, there's no more three modes of nature covering this microphone. As long as I'm using it in Krishna's service. But when I stop using it in Krishna's service, mm-hmm. Let's say I go out and I do some karaoke tonight. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Maybe Sanjay can tell me about these things.
Well, it depends on what you're singing.
Yeah, and it depends on what I'm saying. You know, obviously I could do My Sweet Lord. It's like spiritual. But if I'm singing, actually I was just listening to one song the other day, Mother-in-Law.
Oh, yeah.
It's a song about mother-in-law. Yeah. I was actually training up a devotee how to relate to his mother-in-law. So that song, don't remember the song. It's
my
name.
So now it's in my head.
I know.
For the rest of the day.
Sorry about that. So that would, then this microphone would be covered by the three modes of nature again. It's interesting. It's interesting. Just like we have the, let's say we have this temple and somehow or other in the future, you know, the demons take over the property and we move the deities to some other place. The temple would merge back into Kunta, you know, into the material world. Right? I mean, this is definitely marble on the floor. It hasn't become any, it's not Chintamani. And the trees out there are not kelpa vrikshas. You know, they haven't become transformed like that. Of course, if one has spiritual vision, you will see like that in the holy Dham. Like if you go into Vrindavan and you have material vision, which then you see the covering of Yogamaya, which Prabhupada said. And if you have spiritual vision, you see what's happening really underneath. You know, all the trees are spiritual. But you have, like Prabhupada said, if you have material vision, you look at the deities. I mean, let's say you're a demon. What demon? you're not a member of Gaudiya Vaishnava or a devotee of God. Then you would see stone. Prabhupada said that. Yayatamam prapajante tamsadaiva vajami. As you approach Krishna, I mean, Krishna's there, but you're covered. You won't see him. Like people go to Goloka Vrindavan and they just see the pigs and the monkeys and all that other, and you know, the stool running in the streets and everything like that, and that's all they see. So it's a question that you have to have the spiritual vision to see. So anyway, getting back to the point of transformation, so this microphone now is not covered by the modes of nature. So therefore, I don't get contaminated by touching it. But if I touch something, come in contact with something, particularly the eating process, then I can get contaminated. Karanam gunasangasha sadasajjanmajonishu. I can get contaminated by the modes of nature. Let's say if I go out, that's why Prabhupada was very strict about where the devotees would eat. You know, Prabhupada, you know, don't eat in restaurants. But of course you could eat in the restaurant, Hare Krishna restaurant here. That's all right. But he said, don't eat in restaurants. Because if you eat food cooked by non-devotees, what? Your mind becomes wicked. Everybody's heard that particular quote before. And of course, devotees nowadays, of course, they don't take it that so seriously. They think, well, we'll just go to McDonald's and order a salad or the French fries.
Most of them try to go to something more and more good. And
well, I've seen devotees go to McDonald's and offer to get the salad or go into Pizza Hut and whatever. But this consciousness... The consciousness, especially Krishna consciousness, that changes the structure of matter. I mean, there's a transformation there. And I'm sure you've all heard of that experiment where a guy in Japan was taking the water crystals and had people thinking different things outside, you know, holding a jar of water. I mean, everybody knows that. And then the water crystal looks completely different. There's a transformation due to consciousness. And of course, even in modern science, physics, they talk about how consciousness affects matter, isn't it? I mean, that's a very common thing, and I'm sure you've heard about that before, like quantum mechanics, how consciousness affects matter. Even the scientists are saying that. And what to speak of Krishna consciousness, how it affects matter. So, I mean, I'll give you a practical example. When I first was traveling many years ago, myself and another sannyasi, it was Rita Nandamaraj, we thought, because we're traveling and preaching, we can eat any damn thing. Actually, Prabhupada said, my disciples will eat any damn thing. So we were just following Prabhupada's instructions. So we would go and buy, they had this nice wheat bread called Oro wheat. You may have heard about that before. The Sankirtan devotees just purchased that. And so we bought, you know, like nice whole wheat bread. You know, no meat, fish, or eggs, obviously. Thousand Island dressings. Anyway, Kraft. At least it was Kraft. So we bought all these things. And for the first few days traveling, then we noticed our consciousness was going down. We actually started fighting with each other. And, you know, consciousness was getting lower. And we think, why is that? And then we decided at that point to take the trouble using a kerosene stove in a moving maxi van. I can't tell you how much anxiety I was in, because he was driving, and he's probably the most sporadic driver imaginable. So driving, going around corners, using a maxi van, you know, and using the wheel well to roll rotis on, chapatis on, in the back, you know. Because in the back, you actually get more rocking than you do in the front. So, and carry, it was dangerous. So I remember doing that, but our consciousness went up. Of course, we almost died from the explosion. But anyway, that's another issue. But no, we didn't. Fortunately, Krishna saved us. So, but the consciousness went up because we were eating food cooked by devotees, or, you know, aspiring devotees, me. And so it really, matter really gets affected and transformed. It's really a fact. A scientific, you know, quantum mechanics, molecular, you know, whatever you're talking about, it's really a fact. The consciousness, I mean, even amongst devotees, we find that when someone has a real negative attitude, it really pollutes the atmosphere, doesn't it? Like someone's real critical. You see that sometimes. Yeah. Instead of looking at the glass being, like Prabhupada said, glass being half full, he said the glass is empty. Like, who's the pure devotee here in New Talabat? You know, I mean, and you look at the positive thing, and if you emphasize the positive thing, and you make plans, of course, he who fails to plan, plans to fail, you make plans to increase things in a positive way, then things get increased. But then you get, sometimes you get all this negative energy. You know, and people speak, it's a fact. Sound vibration really goes right to the heart. Not only does it transform matter, but Lord Kapilade states in the third canto of Bhagavatam, Sitam Prasangam Mamaviriya Samadam Bhavanti Hrit Karna Visayana Kata. And Prabhupada comments in that regard, there's a channel between the ear and the heart. There's a channel. I mean, I'm not talking about, you know, some gross channel like you have, but there's a channel. That's why hearing is more important than seeing. Because your consciousness becomes directly affected by hearing something. You see something, all right, you know, it's beautiful. But when you listen, let's say you listen to music, you know, with a spiritual message, hopefully, and then it changes the whole consciousness. You just go, wow, I just feel so Krishna, I want to serve. And then you hear criticism, negativity, especially Vaishnava criticism. I mean, one of the qualities of Lord Chaitanya's associates is that they did not criticize Vaishnavas. They did not criticize Vaishnavas. It's mentioned in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. No matter what, they didn't criticize Vaishnavas. They might have been aware of behavior, like Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when this one devotee wasn't cleaning the Gundicha temple so well. He got a little sarcastic with him. But he didn't say, you know, you're just useless, hopeless, get the hell out of here. Of course, he did say that to Shivas Thakur's mother-in-law, but anyway, that's a different issue. So, he didn't criticize her, he just kicked her out because she wasn't a pure devotee. So, in other words, it's very important to be positive in our sound vibration and positive in our attitude. And then, consciousness, you know, our consciousness can change matter. And it's very important to be strict in our eating and sleeping and mating and defending. You know, Prabhupada said that too. And it keeps everything free from the molds of nature. Brahmarpanam Brahmahavya. This is 424, in case many of you know. Brahmarpanam Brahmahavya Brahmagno Brahmanam Hutam. Brahma Tena Gantavyam Brahma Karma Samadhi. A famous verse. This verse is usually chanted by the group called the Brahma Kumaris. You may have heard about them before. And I'm not becoming a member of them, because I'm not a Kumari. But anyway, I'm not a young girl. Or a young boy. So, Brahmarpanam, Brahmaarpanam. If one makes an offering, Arpanam, Brahmahavir, and the metaphor is that just like ghee, you know, like in an offering you make a fire sacrifice, you offer what? Ghee, right? Not olive oil. Sometimes I've seen they do offer corn oil in the sacrifice because they can't afford the ghee. Not devotees of ISKCON, hopefully. So, Brahmarpanam Brahmahavir, Brahmagno Brahmano Hutam. And this offering becomes Brahman. Brahma Tena Gantav Yam Brahma Karma Samadhinam. And so the offering that we're making is Brahma Karma. What that means, karma doesn't mean in this respect a karmic reaction. It means just activities. So Brahma Karma. It means activities for Brahman, which is pretty much in tune with what's going on here in the verse. It says, thus by pure consciousness, due to constant devotional remembrance. In other words, they were focused on their service, and also they were doing it for Krishna. But sometimes devotees will not focus on their service and think, well, I just got to remember Krishna. That's not the point. Like, there was one story when, a devotee was driving Srila Prabhupada, and he was just like chanting and not focusing on driving. And Prabhupada told him, just, you know, focus on the driving, meditate on driving. Or sometimes people drive and they have their japa bead in the hand, japa bag in the hand, or drive and mobile phones in their hand. You know, you got to focus on your service. So they were focused on their service, in spite of their service being with the Pandavas, you know, fighting. Administration too, you know, obviously, as administration. They were focused on their service, and they were also focused on Vaishnav qualities, you know, being compassionate. In the battle, that was a different thing. That was their compassion. Because, of course, everyone who died in the battlefield, Kurukshetra, got liberated because they died before Krishna. And in Kurukshetra, which is the holy place, Dharmakshetra, Kurukshetra, Samaveda, Yusabaha. So they were concentrated on their service, and because they were concentrated on their service and on developing spiritual qualities, and there's an interesting story about that in the Mahabharata. The Mahabharata describes really in detail what happened with the Pandavas when they retired. And of course, the Bhagavatam describes this also, not in so much detail. The Bhagavatam describes that they went to the north. And as where they went to the north, the Mahabharata describes it, one by one, each of the Pandavas passed away. And they passed away due to some perceived fault, which is a pastime anyway. I mean, for example, Bhishma passed Bhima passed away because he was gluttonous. He ate more than he should have, other people's portion. Arjuna passed away because he didn't defeat an enemy that he had vowed to defeat in one day. And, you know, he didn't keep his promise. And it was even Nakula or Sahadev passed away because he thought he was the most handsome guy on Earth planet. Anyway, so, and each of the Pandavas passed away, but then the point I'm getting to is Yudhisthira and the Vaishnava quality of compassion. So Yudhisthira was left alone, and Yudhisthira was being followed by a dog. You know that story? Mm-hmm. And Yudhisthira gets to the top of the mountain or whatever, and Indra comes down and says, you know, time to go to heaven. This is also interesting, too, because it describes in the Mahabharata that the Pandavas went to heaven, and actually there are expansions of the Pandavas in heaven. You know, we started with the whole class talking about it. You know, original personalities are in the Goloka Vrindavan, and they expand by Kuntha, and they expand in the heavenly planets. Remember? Talk about that again. Just a few minutes ago. It's Kali Yuga. Anyway, so...
That was yesterday.
No, that was today. I know it's Kali Yuga, Manda Sumanda Vatiyo Manda Bhagya Padrata. So Yudhisthira gets to the top, the dog is still with him, and he's protecting the dog, taking care of the dog. And Indra comes and says, time to go to heaven. And Yudhisthira says, I'm only going to go if this dog can come too. And basically, Indra says, no dogs allowed in the spiritual world, or in the heavenly planets. I mean, those dogs are moochy. It's just, you know, I was just reading a story in the news the other day, one dog licked his master, and the master got an infection and had to have all four of his limbs amputated. Mm. Prabhupada actually said that. The dog's kiss is actually poisonous. Wow. So don't go kissing your dog. Anyway, so a little side information there. So
you may not want some of your vegan group, with the Humane Society to hear that.
Well, no, you can take care of the dog, give him prasadam, you know, we have no trouble. Someone having a dog outside the house, but don't go kiss him. Don't let him kiss you, especially on the lips. So anyway, Yudhisthira was taking care of this dog. He refused to go to heaven because he wanted to take care of the dog. And he described, this is the quality, a Vaishnava quality that is most sinful, to neglect someone who's taking shelter of you. Yudhisthira, you know, this is actually a Vaishnava, you know, super Vaishnava quality, one which we're supposed to understand and adapt to our lives too. Because as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu teaches, you know, the two most important things that Lord Chaitanya taught were Nama Ruchi and Jiva Doya. Right? Vaishnava Seva falls under that too, but Nama Ruchi and Jiva Doya. And it's the same thing in the Bible. Jesus Christ said, you should love the Lord with all thy heart, with all thy might, and all thy soul. And what? Do unto others as you would have others do unto you. The golden rule. In other words, see others, paradukha dukhi. That's his expression of paradukha dukhi. So Yudhisthira was tested, and then he was further tested after the dog revealed himself as Yamaraj. And when he went to heaven and he was further tested by not seeing his brothers there, was taken to hell, and his brothers ostensibly were there. And he decided, I'll stay here just to help my brothers, if that helps them. You know, so that is the test. That is actually the big test that all of us will have to pass. You know, it's not just that you chant Hare Krishna and be happy, but there has to be unlimited compassion, a willingness to sacrifice. So we got one of the dogs complaining, you know, right now. See, I mentioned that, and the dog...
Compassion.
I'm compassionate, but I'm not going to kiss him. No, I love dogs.
She's the dog that we are projecting, and she found where we go.
Yeah,
so
that's okay. I think she didn't like what I just said. So we have to develop this quality, too, of compassion, if we want to go back to Godhead. I mean, this is really the point. It says, by pure consciousness, by constant devotional remembrance. All right, they were always engaged in Krishna consciousness and always thinking of pleasing Krishna. And they always had compassion and love and were Vaishnava. Another point about compassion is Arjuna, he was ready to give up the battle to fight the battle in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita because of compassion for his relatives. Mm-hmm. And of course, Krishna smashed him for that, but Prabhupada also said that's a natural Vaishnava quality. It's not that it, you know, in that particular case, it was disobedience of Krishna's order. But that natural Vaishnava quality of being compassionate, willing to sacrifice everything, even, you know, not to hurt anybody. I mean, it was a little misguided, I mean, pretty misguided in Arjuna's case, but still, he exhibited the softness of the heart that's a natural quality of Vaishnavas. So anyway, so because the Pandavas exhibited this, and we understand they're Nityasiddha devotees anyway, but because they show the example of exhibiting this, that example is meant for us. The Pandavas are meant to be, one of the reasons we hear about the Pandavas is they're meant to be role models for us. That's one of the reasons. Krishna's not our role model. He's a terrible role model for us. You know, do not dance with girls in the middle of the night, please. Especially if they're married to someone else. Make sure they're single. So don't dance with girls in the middle of the night. Don't go stealing butter. Don't go pinching babies. Don't go passing urine on. Krishna did pinch babies. Yeah. To make them cry.
He also killed his wet nurse.
Yeah, he killed his wet nurse. Don't go killing your nurse. I mean, don't go killing a bull. Krishna killed a bull, for sure. So, no matter how bad the bull is. So, Krishna doesn't set that particular example for us. Whereas Lord Ram does, actually. But even more so, we find that Krishna's devotees, like the Pandavas, they should be our source of inspiration. Just like when I hear, I mean, to me, my main source of inspiration in the Mahabharata is Arjuna. You know, he's just like my hero. And in the Ramayana, it's Hanuman. You know, it's completely devoted. And of course, Lakshman too. I mean, there's many other examples. And of course, Lord Ram being devoted to the truth. So we hear about these stories so that we can be inspired to be like that. And we hear about Prabhupada, not just because it's a nice story, oh, Prabhupada crossed the ocean, he had two heart attacks. No. We hear about, yes, he did do that, but we hear about that. So the main point is what do you do about it? Isn't it? I mean, if you don't apply it, knowledge without application does not get realized. You know, you can just tell all this Prabhupada stories until, you know, hell freezes over. But you have to understand, that's our example. We're supposed to be like that. Not imitate. And we won't be exactly like Prabhupada, obviously. There's no one like Prabhupada. But it's a source of inspiration. So the Pandavas are sources of inspiration for us. So any questions or comments? Yes.
Along the lines of compassion, because this is a very delicate thing. When we're dealing with, Prabhupada was very, very concerned that everyone had the opportunity to take shelter.
Yeah.
But there are examples where Srila Prabhupada rejected disciples.
Yeah, because that was compassion for them. Because had they remained, they would be committing more offenses.
So my point is that there's discrimination.
Yeah.
We can't be
just namby-pamby.
Right. But we should really try to go the extra mile. But at a certain point, Papa, I just heard a story where there's one woman and her husband, I'm not going to get into the details, but the husband was one of the three people that Papa just blessed them that they should just go out to the material world and enjoy.
Yeah.
And you're no longer my disciples.
Yeah. And that was done out of compassion, not out of anger. You know, sometimes we find relationships split in this world, you know, like divorces and things like that, out of anger and hate and everything. Prabhupada understood, first of all, what was the best thing for them, You know, if they hung around the devotees, they'd be committing more offenses. So better they're separated from the devotees. Like one of the points of Maya is she keeps envious people away from Krishna. So Prabhupada was acting in that same regard, keeping envious people away from the devotees. So I think Prabhupada's actions were compassionate completely. So compassion is sometimes, what do they say, tough love. You know, like that story Prabhupada tells about the aunt who never chastised her nephew, and the nephew grew up to be a criminal, killed people. And the police asked, as they're getting ready to kill the nephew, do you have any last requests? He said, yes, I'd like to say something in my aunt's ear. And he bit off her ear. And she said, you know, why did you bite my ear? And of course, she was in pain. He said, because you never chastised me. So, you know, sometimes some chastisement appropriate. But we don't want to lose it. You know, lose our temper while we're chastising. So everything's been done with compassion for all parties concerned. And that requires discrimination. That's what Prabhupada had when he rejected these devotees. That was in Los Angeles. He said, you know, actually the full thing is they said, you are a spiritual master, Prabhupada said. And Prabhupada said, they said to Prabhupada, you are a spiritual master. And Prabhupada said, you have no spiritual master. And they said, what is my duty in life? And Prabhupada said, your duty is to go out and enjoy the material world. So, cut them off. But that was for their good benefit. So, who else? Yeah.
Maharaj, earlier you were using the examples of the microphone and how it can be
spiritualized.
Yes. And you were saying how when you and Ridhananda Maharaj were traveling, y'all were eating oral wheat. But that oral wheat, y'all were taking, y'all were offering it, you were using it in Krishna's service to nourish your bodies, to render service.
Yeah.
So why can't Krishna, if he can Krishnaize a microphone, why can't he Krishnaize that?
He can, but Krishna, probably Krishna didn't accept it. You know, because when Krishna accepts things, they're offered with love and devotion, cooked with love and devotion. I mean, why, it wouldn't it be just easier to buy all the food instead of maintaining cooks here in New Talma? Wouldn't it be easier? I mean, you just go out and get some prepared foods. At the super Walmart, they have prepared foods now, right?
Yes.
So, I mean, that would be really easy. Anyway, in an emergency, yes, it would work, but it wasn't. In other words, Krishna wanted to put us in a particular situation where we would cook things out of devotion for him. If there was another circumstance, I'm sure, where there was no alternative, then it wouldn't have had that same effect on us. But because we had the facility, ability to do it, and Krishna was teaching us many things by that. And you know, our standard of worship got really loose. We used to go to a supermarket and buy a whole bag of groceries and Sri Vishnu the whole bag of things. I think, you know, that's the whole scenario. It was really loose. And it got to the point where we would offer the whole supermarket. We go to the front of the supermarket and said, my dear Lord Krishna, everything is not me for charades. Please accept Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna. And the whole supermarket was, I don't know if Krishna actually accepted the whole supermarket.
One morning had a mantra, Om Tat Sat. Oh God, thanks a lot.
I don't even know where the Sri Vishnu, Sri Vishnu, Sri Vishnu came from.
Yeah, that was before you drank water.
Yeah, but I never heard Prabhupada do it.
No.
It's been around for a long time.
I mean, it used to be, people would say, just Sri Vishnu it. But Prabhupada, that expression, I looked up in the Veda base and, you know, talked to devotees, and Prabhupada never said Sri Vishnu. I don't even know where it came from. Sri Vishnu.
We weren't allowed to drink water until we said Sri Vishnu. That's what it was.
Yeah, I remember the same thing. Everything had to be Sri Vishnu, Sri Vishnu, Sri Vishnu. So one time when my mother was in the temple, I offer the water, Shri Vishnu, Shri Vishnu, Shri Vishnu. That was when I was a fanatic devotee. And I spilled the water on the floor. And I thought, right in front of my mother, I thought, you know, this water is non-different than Krishna. You know, I had such faith in those days. I got down on my hands and knees and started slurping up the water in front of my mother. And she basically almost had a heart attack, seeing her son, you know, who she spent so much time, money, and energy putting through school, slurping on the floor like a pig. Anyway. Yeah.
Maharaj, you were talking about how the Pandavas are actually expansions of the Achambra, the Vrajvasi.
Yes.
And that we've been talking about Yudhisthira Maharaj recently, I started wondering, like, how the Lord always comes with this entourage. And, like, in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes, I was wondering, who is Yudhisthira? So I looked it up, and he's actually this devotee, Gopinath Patanayaka, who's the son of Bhagananda Rai.
Yeah.
And the brother of
Ramananda Rai.
Ramananda Rai. And then Vaidyanath, the son is Bhima, and I forget the names of Nikhil and Sahadev. But that just made me, like, that made me so happy that, you know, everybody's there, and they're involved in the Leela, they're, you know, helping the Lord to enact this pastime.
Yeah. Ramananda Rai's wife is Kunti.
Ramananda Roy is also described as Vishaka. So he's a combined incarnation. Mm-hmm. Like Swarup Damodar is Lalita. I mean, he's combined incarnation. It gets pretty fancy. I'm an incarnation of Ravana, so.
Well, you wish. You wish, because then you'd be one of Jaya.
Oh, that's true. That's true. That's true. That's true. I'm sorry about that. Yeah.
So, but on another level, like, there's several, you know, everything is Brahman.
Yeah.
But also, Prabhupada, like, in my poor, in the walk, he was saying, Paramatma is everywhere.
Yes, that's
true. He's in every atom and in between every atom.
That's right.
Like this road we're walking.
Yeah.
So even if, you know, that microphone stand is being used in Maya's service.
Still, Paramatma is in every atom.
Paramatma is everywhere.
But it's covered with the modes of nature. That's
the
difference.
But Prabhupada was saying Paramatma.
Yeah. Yeah, it's covered with the modes of nature if it's used in Maya service, but Paramatma is still in every atom.
It's still spiritual energy.
I mean, Prabhupada, in one sense, the energy is one, you know, Sarvakaro Idam Brahman. In one sense, everything is Brahman, but there's also transformations.
Right.
You know. Anyway. The Mayavadis have all these different mantras, which they call Mahavakyas, like Sarvakal Vidam Brahma, and then Aham Brahmasmi, Tatvamasi, you know, anyway. Yeah, you'll get it.
It's a transformation when the modes of material nature are purified on a microphone.
Not purified, they've gotten rid of, there's no modes.
Where there's no modes. That's a sort of transformation. What sort of transformation is it when you see like a caterpillar come out of the butterfly?
That's just the modes.
Yeah. So what? But I'm.
That's just the material.
I want to compare it to a soul getting rid of the material body and taking like a.
Yeah. I mean, that's a good metaphor, but it's completely different category.
So what is that category where you transform into like a spiritual body?
That's the matter regaining its original spiritual quality, as Prabhupada said. Mm. But, you know, the form changes. Because Krishna is all-powerful. He can do anything with any one of his energies. His energies are actually first-class servants. So he can transform matter to spirit. Like Prabhupada gives the example that you've all heard about. Electrician can transform electrical energy into heating or cooling. You know, you got an air conditioner, reverse cycle air conditioner, you just flip a switch, it's either heating or cooling. So why can't Krishna do that? He can transform things. With most of us, our bodies won't get transformed.
Well, mine's transforming to old man.
Yeah, mine's transforming too. It already has transformed.
Yeah.
And, you know, the hair transformed out.
Wasn't shaved up?
What's that?
You didn't shave up?
This portion. This portion I did. This portion I don't have to shave. Okay, I think it's time to end. All glories to His divine grace. Shri the Prabhupada, Shri the Prabhupada, Ki Jai.